Good morning and welcome. I've been looking forward to this particular panel for so long, and so far it hasn't disappointed, and we haven't even started yet. Good morning and welcome. It's the 27th of August, and it is a delight to have you with us. We have a lot of issues to talk about. We will get to them in just a moment. Let us talk to our panel first. We welcome Dr. Alan Chartok with us. Good morning, Alan.
And good morning, Joe.
It is great to have you here. Also with us is political consultant Libby Post, our dear friend. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning, darling. How are you?
I am fine, and welcoming her back to the fold after a very long absence, and we missed her horribly. And she is back today, University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo.
I'm so glad to be back. I haven't talked all summer.
So you have a lot to get off your chest, don't you? So I don't know how much you can tell us. I don't know how much you can tell us. But what you were in Bosnia.
Yeah. I go to Bosnia, you guys know this, like
yes.
Every summer. I've been doing it
right.
Since 2005, and I'm part of a group that's called the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, which really gets us into the doors of lots of politicians. They love to see us there. But what it is a bunch of independent investigative reporters in all the areas of the former Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, and they work together to stop horrible corruption that's going on in all the governments over there, which really stops democracy. So we're a democracy builders.
But it's going to be very, very scary. I mean, to the point where some of those people are well known for, let's say, killing and maiming people.
Yeah, we have physical threats, legal threats, all kinds of dangers are very common to our reporters, unhappily. And we spent a lot of the summer encrypting our computers and installing all kinds of new security measures. NSA did not help to make us feel any more secure.
Well, I was curious as to whether the stories of the NSA stories, Snowden and so forth,
right.
What impact they had on you.
They were people in where we work were kind of laughing at it. It was like, well, of course that's going on. These are people who have always considered that the government was watching over them and listening in, and they consider us terribly naive as Americans that we thought our government was any different. Which is, I found, really kind of demoralizing. But how could that guy go in, the Fox reporter, go in and talk to his source at the State Department and not think he would be followed? Well, you know, he was a reporter for a major news outlet. Whether you like it or not, Fox is a major news outlet.
And, I don't like it.
He covers the State Department. He goes in and talks to a source. Yeah, I don't think he was naive to think he was not going to be followed and harassed. So it was very bad. We've spent a lot of time working. There's now a whole group of reporters who have emerged internationally who do nothing but protect sources on reporters' computers and information on their computers so that you're not getting not just yourself, but the people who talk to you can get into trouble.
Do you come back with any optimism?
Yeah, I do, man. You cannot. I went as part of the project this year. I was in Bosnia, Georgia, and Ukraine, and these are places that they've never had journalism. You know, it never had journalism, and I saw so many of these young people. They're kids, really. They make zero money. I don't know how they eat. They have very little. It's not actually lack of respect from the public. The public doesn't know what the hell they're doing. You know, why would you risk your life and your family to do the work they do? It's dangerous work, both financially and physically. There's one woman who works.
So
with
the financial part isn't that much different than this.
No,
country.
The financial part's a lot like here. Right? We do, and they do the same thing. They live with mom and dad, who feeds them
as long as they can, right?
Yeah. But yet they totally believe in this, and we are so down on reporters and journalism in this country. Oh, great! Who needs newspapers? Get rid of them. And then you have to go to a place where they're struggling to make it happen because they know the value of it. So I come back and I'm like angry at Americans who don't get it because we are so lucky to have what we do, and inspired by these people who work really hard to make sure they are getting it there. There's one woman that we work with in Azerbaijan. That's the oil-rich former Soviet republic. And she's she's a really large woman. She, I mean, and like to the extent that her health was endangered and she's had to have bypass. They call her the fat one in the administration. And they put a bug in her bedroom, and they tape her and her boyfriend together. And then pictures of this go out to her family. This is a Muslim country. It's a boyfriend. She's unmarried. And then with a note, with a message saying, whore, stop it, or everyone will know what you're like. And her response was to go on Facebook and to all the media groups in the world and say, look what they're doing to me. And the reason this was happening was that she was able, through our organization, to report on these industries which are raping the countryside of Azerbaijan, and they're all held by the first family. Members of the first family are shareholders in it, or, yeah, or owners of the company. That was the reporting that got this behavior towards her. So, you know, we're worried about her safety a lot. There's an election coming up, and she's refusing to leave. You know, she could come to the United States. She could go to Georgia. She won't do it because her family's there. I mean, this is brave stuff. So, yeah, I love going over there. I feel like I'm honored to work with these people and help in some way.
We're thrilled to be back. We're glad you're safe.
I love this safe thing. Oh, are you safe over there? The only real danger is a cholesterol overload. I eat very well when I'm in Eastern Europe.
All right. I would say the same thing of anyone who was like traveling to Baltimore.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true. Okay, that might be a little more dangerous. Traveling.
For all you Baltimore people, that's Joe at WAMC.
I just mean getting on a plane, doing, you know, any travel. Just want to be safe.
That's true.
You know? So, it's a thrill to have you back, and we love having you share your perspective. Let us talk about some of the stories in the news, and let us begin with Syria, which is a scary story and is one that is dominating the headlines, rightfully so, across the world this morning. Moving a step closer to possible American military action in Syria, a senior Obama administration official said Sunday night that there was very little doubt that the president in Syria, the military forces, had used chemical weapons against civilians last week, and that a Syrian promise to allow United Nations inspectors access to the site was too late to be credible. A lot of this is eerie in its similarities, obviously.
Yeah.
So where do you think we are in this? And Alan, let's begin with you.
Well, as was it Yogi or Casey who said deja vu all over again?
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, the American people really were immunized to a degree by weapons of mass destruction the last time. We were assured it was so and the rest. Then the other question is, who wants us? You know, when you took a look at the Iraqis and you polled them, they said, get out of here. We don't like you. We don't want you. And so who made us the policemen becomes a very interesting question. So I would think if we're going to do anything, we darn well ought to do it with the British and the French and maybe them taking the lead for once. You know, there's always steps in this stuff. So the first step is always a no-fly zone. You know, we don't want their planes delivering. It sounds attractive, almost seductive. We don't want them delivering, chemical weapons. And then to support them, we put boots on the ground. And there is no good side on this, the way I see it, because, you know, on the one hand, you get this thuggish Assad, and on the other hand, you get some people in the stories that come out virtually every day. These are not our pals. And just like Osama, who we supported, some of these guys are going to be the very people who take on the United States and have taken on the United States in the past. So my first view would be stay the hell out.
There is a I want to throw in this this comment, which is from the article in the Times this morning. While administration officials emphasized that Mr. Obama has not decided to take action, they said he was determined not to be drawn into a protracted debate over gaining access for the United Nations investigators because of doubts that they could now produce credible findings.
Well, they were shot at this morning.
Yeah.
Those UN investigators. And, you know, this is a no-win situation. The only one who's really going to benefit is Halliburton, the likes of Halliburton, you know, just like they did in Iraq. But on the other hand, you have this tinderbox and you have this lone Jewish state. I mean, you know, I think of this and it's real geopolitics. You've got Israel there, who Netanyahu's ready to push the button. He's ready to send the missiles over, which would send the whole region into a fireball of war. And so do we play the world's policeman? Do we maintain an isolationist stance like some people would like us to do? I think this is a no-lose situation where we're going to get drawn in.
No win,
in.
You mean?
No win.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Everyone's
where we are,
gonna lose,
yeah. Everyone's going to lose. And where we are going to get drawn in, it's just about how badly and how many people are going to die. That's from our side of the
Well, if you
defense.
Were the president, what would you do?
I think I would probably push on the United Nations, and you have to go for an international force. We can't go it alone. Sure. And if we could have
Which
somebody
seems
else,
to be doing. I mean,
yes,
that seems to be the
yes,
course of
Yes, but action. It seems like we're the ones who are pushing them to do it. And so it would be nice if some of the other big countries would say, why don't you join us, instead of us having to say to them, why don't you join us?
Right. Yeah, I've spent the whole summer in a country that went through a genocide. I've been reading about Rwanda, where there was another genocide, and it's happening all over again. This is a story that has a lot of resonance in Bosnia. Everyone knows about it because it's them. It's them all over again. Mm. And they see that same desperation in Syria for U.S. intervention. They want the U.S. to come in and save them, which, of course, Bosnians had for a long time. And we did not go in until very late, after 100,000 people had been killed. And the same in Rwanda, when the UN was fully apprised of what was going on, could have, with very little investment, have saved a million lives and chose not to. And I can't say, although when I left here, I might have been completely on your side, let's stay the hell out. We've already gotten ourselves into two other wars that are ridiculous. But now, being reminded of that, here's what I would like to see instead. Absolutely, we should go in. And yes, with our military allies, with the UN, and stop that. 100,000 people should not die again. We need to stop that. And then go in with the plan in all of the countries, including Libya, the most recent place we went in. We just stopped after the hot war ends. We just disappear, and then turmoil sets in. And Bosnia could blow up again. So could Rwanda. So could Libya. And we didn't do anything to stop that. Not our diplomacy, not our nation building. It's time to stop this whole debate. Yes, we need to nation build if we're going to save lives. Otherwise, we sit back and we're going to watch, you know, another few hundred thousand people die.
How exactly do you nation build again?
Well, you come up with a plan where you force people to the table to talk. And there's even more sides in Syria than there were in Bosnia, where there were three groups involved. There's, what, five in Christians and Druze and Alawites. My God, yeah, there's five or six groups in Syria. So that should be going on right now. What is Syria going to look like after this is over?
And then you have the people at home that are saying, why are we risking the lives of our young men and women to save these thousands?
Well, what are we
going to
risk the lives of our young people for? What's it worth, a young life? You're a soldier and you sign up. I mean, we have this, Americans, and the news media is responsible for this. We have this ridiculous view that we're going to be the world's superpower, the best army in the world, but not what a single soldier is going to ever die.
Right.
That's ridiculous. It's just unrealistic. Right. Our lives, we're going to put lives at risk for as long as we have an army. So what are we going to risk it for? An invasion of the U.S.? That's the only thing we're going to put our force into use for? Why be a superpower?
You know, the thing is, there's always the political will to get in.
Yeah.
But there's never the political will to stay and do the work that you're talking about.
Right.
You know, everyone will rally around that flag because the flashpoint is there. These people are dying, chemical weapons. We don't want them over here. But then if we make that commitment, there won't be the political will in Congress. There won't be the political will in the country to be in it for the long haul.
Right.
And that's part of what we're up against constantly in this country because of how bifurcated we are.
Right. And part of the problem is the American people. How many people out there, WNC is different, so that's not a fair question, but can explain what's going on in Syria? My students can't. And Bosnia?
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know if everybody who
three
listens
of us are
can,
teachers,
because
yeah.
I'm not sure I can. Yeah. So you know.
Well, yeah.
I mean, we ought to know, or could explain what happened in Libya or Bosnia. It's people still, you know, don't know what went on in Bosnia. We were hugely involved in that conflict. We don't we're not part of the debate to demand better action by our leaders.
But I think what you say is a great point. And certainly when you look at, when you ask a very general question of, you know, do we know what we're talking about when we're talking about Syria? I mean, I think a lot of us can say, yes, this is what the issue was. But the many layers,
right.
What scares me is I think that the people who are making the decisions are also
right.
somewhat bereft of information and right. don't know exactly what it is that they're doing.
I've always used Afghanistan as the example. We go waltzing into Afghanistan, and there was a wealth of information, not just from the British, who were involved for a long time, and the Soviets, who got admired, but from our own CIA operatives. And that information was overlooked. We just didn't – there's just no – thought or study or planning, and I hope that Obama is doing that.
But
I hope that's what's going on.
I'm sorry, Rosemary, but isn't there also a political component to this? In
sure.
other words, there's the rational stuff that you're talking about, this group, that group, what we're doing, how we're stopping. But on the other hand, people are looking at the polls. The president is looking at the polls. He wants to know what's popular, what's doable. FDR did the same thing. I mean, Harry Truman lost
right.
every bit of popularity he ever had over Korea. You
right.
know, these guys are looking to see what their political components
are. Well, you're right. And we make it easy for them because we don't know. We don't know what to demand of our leaders because we don't take the time to study and think about this. But we live in a global world. And the U.S. is a superpower and needs to be involved in the world. So how? How are we going to do this? What do we want our military to do? What do we want our politicians to do in these messed up countries? It does not help the United States that an increasing number of countries are falling into disarray. There's, you know, how many Somalias can this world
I still
support?
Don't know what the choices are.
Right.
I don't know what our choices are. I mean, you say it's not good for the United States that there's disarray around the world.
Correct.
In these places. But on the other hand, who does the fix? I mean, do we become a sort of superpower saying we're going to set it all straight and we'll position our people there? The British did it for 1,000 years. I mean, they're maybe not 1,000, but they did it for a long mm-hmm. time. And look what became of them. I mean, they get overextended. And
yeah.
I think, you know, I think it's got to be a very, very strong argument for going in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
The British were on the phone with the president yesterday. The French were on the phone with the president yesterday. I mean, it seems to be that the temperature is being taken right. of the situation. The one thing, and before we go to our news break, we kept on hearing yesterday about the Obama administration taking a sharper tone. Does that, you know, what does it take to make that? And is that a timing issue? You know, like, I don't know what that
yeah.
means. You
it's
know,
like
when they
media,
say there's sharper.
It's like media speak. You
it
know,
is.
He said before, we won't get involved unless, you know, they're using chemical weapons. Okay, they're involving chemical weapons. They stepped over the line. Now what? He better have a sharper
One,
tone.
Two,
yeah.
two and a half.
I'm going to count
two
to three. And the French should be good players in this. The French went into Malawi, another country that.
Yeah, they did.
Malawi, I said the country wrong. Mali. They went into that to stop a move by al-Qaeda to take over that government. And they were annoyed that the Americans didn't help. And they ought to be. The Americans, if they had a consistent policy, would stop this devolvement of countries into chaos. Pakistan, it's happening.
So I want to ask you one more time. If you do a poll of their citizens.
Of whose citizens?
Of the citizens of the countries we're talking about. Yeah. Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and say, should the United States use its troops and its weapons to come in here? And you get a resounding no. Then what do?
You just say, all these polls are inaccurate.
And remember, that the guys who were in office on either side, I mean, if you get the Egyptian military right now, they know that the day they give in and the other guys come back, they're dead people.
Right.
Literally dead. And they're not going to do it.
Right.
So there's a lot of reasons that this will continue.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think our policy should be based on what people hope we'll do or don't want us to do. It should be based on self-interest and smart self-interest. And we don't do that. We go in sporadically, then we get out, and the country gets even worse. Ugh, it's a mess.
We're going to take a break. When we return after an NPR news break, we'll talk about other stories with Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post, Alan Chartok, myself. We welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to our roundtable panel, and we welcome your input in the panel roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage, our Facebook page, our Twitter page. In other words, there's no excuse. And we'd love to hear from you. We have a terrific panel before us this morning. Dr. Alan Chartok is here. We also have Rosemary Armeo, who is back.
Back from summer vacation.
I assume you start teaching today?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be ready. I have the syllabus all done.
You're ready. And of course, Libby Post joins us as she does every Monday. Good morning, Libby. Let us talk about, we've been talking the first part of the program about Syria, and I want to move on to some other issues. And it is, it's about climate change, and the UN scientists are putting the final touches on the first volume of a massive report that will give the world the most detailed picture yet of climate change. This is a report that is expected to be unveiled in Stockholm, Sweden on September 27th. The document will be scrutinized word by word, certainly, by everybody, by green groups, by fossil fuel lobbies, by governments, to see if it will perhaps take climate change into the next level of whatever that may be, either of action or inaction. I will start off with a very cynical question, but, you know, what more do you need? Like, if not this, what?
Soon the sand that people want to stick their heads in, they'll drown because it's going to be underwater. Okay? So let's get a grip here, you know? And we need to debunk the junk scientists and tell them to sell their hooey somewhere else.
So we look at this report, and obviously it's going to be, as I just mentioned, it's going to be heavily scrutinized by all parties involved. So then how do you take action? How do you move forward? How do you look and say, all right, this is what we need to do, not just as a country, not just as politics in this country, but worldwide, because it's a worldwide problem?
You know, Joe, I don't know that it's really going to matter that much. It's the same group who did it the last time years ago and came up. There were a couple of factual errors and people jumped on them and said, and now this is this newest thing. It's going to be heavily, anti the carbon and the rest. It's going to do the same thing it did before. And the same people who have things to gain by it are going to come out and they're going to say it's not good. 10 billion years ago, something else happened. They're going to say whatever they need to say. And frankly, they're not thinking about their grandchildren or their great-grandchildren.
I've been thinking of the writers of this report, you know, that's so ballyhooed, like such a big deal, like to have writer's block as, this is the most important report ever. And I agree with you. I don't think it is. I don't think any report is. And action will come when you get weather slamming into your area, hurting people, knocking over buildings, destroying infrastructure.
We've already had Hurricane Sandy.
And the governor has begun talking about, right? Shore defense. And I think that's how it's going to happen. You have the Christies and the Cuomos of the world.
Libby's response.
Shore defense is a band-aid. We have to change the way we do business.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's unrealistic. We're going to do a lot of band-aids, and then finally it's going to add up to a real first aid. That's what I think
I'm sorry, Joe, but so much of this is about money.
Oh, yeah.
Just immediate gain, greed. Mm-hmm. I saw in the paper today from in one source, I don't even want to say what it was, but it was a POST.
It began with a P and ended with a T, but it has no relation to me. So
no, right. But it had a story about how the governor is opposed to Spitzer's candidacy. Why? Because Spitzer will do damage to the way Wall Street does business. And of course, God bless him if he takes a hard look at some of the things that have led to some of the past transgressions. But no, if this report is right, and as we all know, sometimes the POST is not right, then that's a hell of a story.
Yeah.
And it's also greed.
You look at this, as you mentioned, this is the fifth assessment by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Right. And so 6 years ago, they put out what was their fourth assessment, and it declared that the planet was warming. And it earned the group that wrote the report, including Al Gore, a Nobel Peace Prize.
Indeed.
And led to a climate conference in Copenhagen, which was the biggest summit in UN history. And here we are.
Yeah.
And we remember Kyoto. Remember that?
We didn't participate. Yeah. No, we don't believe this. See you at after the next cataclysm.
Well, you know, and then people were saying, well, it was poorly timed because this was when the economic meltdown happened. And where is the
So here's the question: How do you mobilize the world?
Yes,
and we can't even mobilize, the country right now. So how do you mobilize the whole world? And let's look. Okay, global change and climate warming is huge and gigantic. How about just saving elephants? We're not going to have elephants left in the world anymore because we're killing and poaching them. That's still going on. How can that go on? That you can fix that, yeah. Or rhinos, or if you want rhino horns because you think it's good for your sex life, then start rhino ranches. There's ways to solve all these problems, and we don't have the will to do it. We can't solve that here. How do I mobilize the world?
I so missed you. So have rhino ranches so you can get laid. Excellent.
That's my idea for today.
And let it be reported that Libby had a perplexed look on her face.
Well, I'm not quite sure what the rhino have to do with it.
There you
go. All you straight folks will set me straight.
It's part of the whole, we're using up all of their habitats, and global warming is making it worse, and so we're running out of rhinos. We're not going to have them anymore, and the Chinese are still grinding down their horns. It's just, okay, so grow a whole bunch of rhinos then. I don't know. All of this is solvable. All of this is fixable, and there's just no political will to do it. There's political gain to be made by saying, oh, we're not really getting warm.
I agree with you, except that I think a lot of it isn't fixable. I mean, we have created what Bill McKibben calls a new earth. We have damaged a lot of things that are irreparable as a result. And at what point do you not be able to turn it around and put the toothpaste back in the tube?
Yeah, but except that Bill McKibben has also argued vigorously for saving what you can and doing
it
now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay,
absolutely.
So you stop putting sewage into the oceans. We could do that.
Or to the river.
Into the river, yeah. Or throwing garbage out on the streets. There is lots of stuff we could do that would reverse problems, and we don't.
And I hate to say it, but make alternative energy a much more profitable venture.
I agree. There's lots of sun. Why are we not using that?
I'm doing a project on global warming, not global warming, on solar power stuff. And there's lots of government incentive, at least in New York, to do that. So
that's even a better idea than rhino ranches.
I think so, too. So why don't we put our money where our mouth is and make those industries profitable? And say to the folks who don't want the windmill farm out off the cape, which is
so unpopular
anyway.
You're going to be so unpopular in Lenox, Massachusetts.
Yeah, I know, right?
I can't even walk into that town
now. But the thing is that, first of all, I think they're sort of pretty on the landscape. But it's going to save, if they want their grandchildren to grow up and not have to put on, SPF 750, we need to do something so that the atmosphere, we can go out into it and play. And, so let's try to do something so that we can have more solar power. I'm just as guilty as everybody else. We have two cars. Okay? Mm-hmm. We have two cars because we have to get
around.
What
are they?
A Subaru and a Mini Cooper. Oh. 40 miles to the gallon, 30 miles to the gallon.
Well, I got 56 coming over this morning in my Prius.
Well, good for you. Yeah.
I was in Ukraine where they have amazing trains. Why don't we have trains?
Right.
That's
trains.
Another thing. Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
It costs nothing. You just whip through. It's completely comfortable and fun. It's stress-free and great for the environment. We don't have fast trains anywhere.
CSF. It's certainly not an underwriting announcement which
from
says
CSX.
100 miles to the gallon.
Mm-hmm.
No. 100 miles on 100 miles on 1 gallon.
Okay, it's not 100 gallons for 1 mile.
No.
We have that.
Yeah, we do.
Hummers.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I know.
It fascinates me because it seems to be creeping into our culture in the sense of I hear people just anecdotally say things like, well, you know, when we used to have winter, we would snow, we would sled in the backyard.
Right.
And
we don't have it.
And we don't have it anymore. I mean, we haven't had it in 5, 6, 7 years. And whether that starts creeping into our consciousness and changes things, I don't know.
At Colony, we have the book nook runs for the public library, and it runs in the crossings whenever the farmer's market is there. And the rule has always been, while the good weather lasts, like, oh, wow, maybe we'll go to December this year.
Well, we have.
Exactly.
You know, that absolutely. Exactly. We do the same thing in our town, and they said that until the first snowfall, and we had it until February last year. I mean, you know, it was just, there was no reason not to.
Yeah.
Well, then
you're
there's
right.
the matter of the parking regulations. See, in Great Barrington, you're not allowed to park on the street unless it's when during snow season. But of course, they start enforcing it way before the snow comes.
Yeah.
Come September or October.
So everyone has to have a driveway?
That's an interesting point. That's an interesting point that you make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation on other issues. And we love your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support comes from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org. Homebrew Emporium in North Greenbush, West Boylston, South Weymouth, and Cambridge, offering beer, wine, and cheesemaking equipment and supplies, tea, herbs, and more. And Green Conscience Home and Garden, Saratoga Springs, New York, a green design showroom dedicated to healthy interiors with non-toxic flooring, wall finishes, beds, and more. Green-conscience.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable discussion this morning. A wonderful panel. Rosemary Armeo is back.
In fine form.
Full of ideas.
Libby Post is here, Alan Chartok, and we welcome your input as well. We got a couple of letters, one from Mary who says, please discuss Russia's obvious role in directing Syrian diplomacy and warfare. Also, Putin and Obama's relationship. Does Obama have the skills to deal with Russia? I think not. And how do you propose forcing the UN to act when Russia is controlling Iran and Syria?
Right. Excellent questions. We were discussing them in the break, like, wow, we didn't even talk about Putin. And you're right. And he is he's evil, but he's also a brilliant man. And he has been running the diplomacy very well, very self-directed. And he does control both of them. So why are we caving into him? Why aren't we talking more with him? You probably have some ideas on this.
Well, a few. But basically, I've been poo-pooed because of the concept of national character, which is
poo-pooed
now—
Poo-pooed on
Putin? Poo-pooed. And the people say, oh, poo on him. And the issue is, and the issue, of course, is that does a country have a national character? We do know that if you go back in history with Russia, they believe or have always operated under non-democratic principles. And with a short-lived life of Kerensky, you may remember, who went to the Bronx to open up a little store. So I happen to believe he's nothing more than the latest czar. It's simple,
true.
And he gets away with what he considers. So if there's an anti-gay sense in the country, he grabs it, capitalizes on it, reads it, leads people over it. It's awful.
Yeah, it's brilliant and it's awful and it's been highly effective so far. It's like
if it means dealing with the Syrians, well, I mean, we're talking about an ex-KGB guy, you know,
yep.
and, as colonel and a spy. By the way, people have asked me, are you a spy?
No, and not a missionary either.
No, okay, got
just
it.
Just a journalist. Yeah.
Just a journalist.
A humble journalist.
David Ellickson says, please tell Rosemary that I always love her commentary. I'm from Great Barrington originally, but live here in Bucharest, Romania, where I am a freelance photojournalist for the foreign press. Rosemary's work in Eastern Europe is very intriguing, and welcome back.
I'll take your email. Intriguing. We'll talk.
Yes,
more.
I actually forwarded it to you.
No, I don't. I would like to know him. It's interesting.
Yeah, very cool. So those are the letters we have so far. We always welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org. I want to take a few minutes to talk about someone who was a dear friend of, I think, this community, certainly this radio station, and very sad news that David Griggs Janauer, the conductor who founded Albany Pro Musica, was such a part of the art scene in this community, as well as on the State University campus where he was a professor, passed away yesterday. He was in he had suffered a major stroke while undergoing surgery for bone cancer in March, and it was just a horrible story. And he passed yesterday. And here was a guy who he was on the show regularly. I loved him so much, and he brought so much to the community. And I never saw David have a bad day. He just seemed like he was just happy to be doing something, and I would get notes from him throughout the day about different things that we mentioned on the air, and I think that's what I'll miss the most about him. But you think of someone who is David, along with David Alan Miller, of people who bring such vibrancy to the arts community in this region, and somebody who surely will be missed.
It's stories like this that bring out my dark side, and I always keep thinking there's so many other people I would rather see have to go through what he just did and to be lost than him. I had a friend who
I want to get that straight. Did you say there are other people?
Other people who deserve, you know, horrible ending and being their work being cut short. Yes, it's vicious, but it's true.
That's an uplifting thing for Monday morning.
I said it was dark.
You warned it was dark. But I know exactly what you mean.
But we sit here, we have to be all charitable and all that. No, it's a horrible thing. He went through hell. It was a bad way to end. We've lost a great resource. Yes, we all have to die, but his was particularly a horrible way to go. I feel bad about it. And I hate whoever's responsible. Do you hear that, God?
Well, no, I don't. But I haven't, not yet, but I just did. I just want to talk a little bit about how I met David. And it was an interesting way of meeting this man who I've known for a long time. I did work for him. In 1987, I was working on the March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights. We're doing organizing here in Albany, and we had Holly Near concert, big concert. Mm. And we went around with black bags and collected money. And of course, I counted the money afterwards. And out comes a check from David Janauer. I had no idea who he was, for $100 in 1987. That was a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, this is great. Who is this guy? And I didn't meet him for years after that. But I kept seeing his name. And I thought he was gay. I really did. Because how many straight people in 1987 is going to give $100, you know, for this? And, you know, then I realized he and Paige got married and, you know, he was straight. But he was always the epitome of what it means to be an ally for the LGBT community. He was always out there for us, you know, with letters to the editor, speaking out, he was a mensch. He really was a mensch, and he was just a great guy for his family, for the community, for what he did for Albany Pro Musica. But really, for me, he was somebody who wasn't afraid to stand up when it wasn't fashionable. Mm. You know, and that's how I met David Janauer. It was just through this $100 check. And it was sort of a life changer for me, in a sense, because I wasn't quite sure that there were going to be straight people out there who were going to support the community. Mm-hmm. And it showed that he was, and that there are.
I watched him one time work with, you know, I knew him from working here, of course, and having him come in and talk about Albany Pro Musica and sit down and talk about the various concerts and so forth. And I knew he was a professor, but it wasn't until an event that I went to where I saw him work with the kids. And that was just magical to watch. I mean, he was such a mentor and so great with them and brought so much out of those kids. It was really incredible. And to see them all perform was amazing. Mm-hmm. They would come out at various events and so forth. And just one of those people that you, as you said, Rosemary, you know, you're going to miss horribly and a real loss to the community because he did so much.
It's one of those axioms that are true but completely unfair. No deed, good deed goes mm-hmm. unpunished, and the good die young, and they should mm-hmm. not.
Mm-hmm. Well, while we're on the subject, Rosemary, is there anybody on your list of people you'd rather see die of bone cancer
that you wanted to? I will, and I'll tell you that about that later.
I think you're safe, Alan, but I don't.
No one here. Don't worry.
Oh, that's good. I'm so thankful because, you know,
are you afraid, Liv?
This
I'm
is the
sorry.
First 20,
we've met. We've
30,
just met
45
now.
Minutes I've ever spent with you. And I'm like, okay. I feel so much better now.
You know, I'd love to tell you that it's going to get better, but this is her.
Okay, fine. Hey, you know,
that's what we
people,
love.
I'm sure
that's
people say the her. Same thing about me, so go right ahead.
Why we love her. You know, I was curious, Rosemary, whether there was anything, was there any story that you witnessed while you were gone that you said, oh my God, I wish I was on the panel.
So
that
many. Oh my God, the whole, campaigns in New York, some rather interesting characters there.
Yeah.
I so wanted to be here talking about that.
Which ones in particular interested you?
Wiener.
What did they think about Wiener back there?
Ridiculous.
So, but they knew about him back then?
Of course. Of course.
Isn't that interesting?
They know all the time. There's a great interest in the United States and all the countries.
Did they think he was ridiculous, or the flap?
The whole thing. That he could do, how could you do something so stupid, and does that really matter? That but you heard it discussed both ways.
Isn't that interesting? International.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah,
international.
Right. And I'm sure it'll be his.
I love it. But if you went up to them and asked who mayoral candidate Thompson was, I'm sure that they would have no idea whatsoever.
Probably not, yeah. No. But him they definitely knew. Everything involving Hillary, of course, Bosnians are very interested in. They like her.
They love her.
Clintons. Yeah. So
they wanted the NBC documentary.
Well, that, you know, that's an interesting story.
You better explain it real fast.
I can. Go.
Well, NBC had been wanting to do a documentary on, I don't even know there was a documentary.
It was a movie
of the week kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And came under enormous flap because she was going to be perceived to be a front runner in the upcoming presidential election. And is that the time and the place for that? And this is one of those things where I don't think really anybody wanted it. It's really interesting. Hillary didn't want it. Other than the network.
So that was a big story, and they didn't care about it. But I was real interested in the nanotech story. I wished I had been here talking about that.
You thought it was wrong to separate. You joined me in that.
And me. Yeah. I think it's wrong too.
So if you want to build up your school system, you don't take away an incredibly great adventure
which that, you supported in the beginning.
Which you supported exactly.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Well, we, again, it's roundtable at WAMC.org, and I would love to give out individual emails, but I'll just forward them to the people who you're yelling about. It's just easier.
Who are they yelling about?
I don't know. They seem to have mine.
Can you tell us now so we know what we can prepare for?
No, that takes away all the fun.
Oh.
Rosemary, you'll be back tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Libby, we'll see you Monday.
We love you,
Thank
Libby.
You very much. Well, actually, we won't see you Monday because it's the holiday next week, but
right.
we'll catch you up.
Right.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Coming up next, we're going to continue our conversation about climate change and talk about oceans with Brian Fagan. That and much more coming up on the Roundtable.